Hello, hello, and welcome to this week's episode of All Right, Okay. I'm CJ.
I'm Christina Marie.
And this is the show where we talk about life and entertainment and how everything's going to be all right and everything's going to be okay.
Yup.
How was your weekend? Lovely.
My weekend was great. Today was a shit show, but my weekend was fantastic. How about you?
I had a fairly solid weekend. It was real chill. Went out by myself for the first time in a really long time, mm-hmm. like to have like a drink and things.
Mm-hmm.
And then on Sunday, I went to a really fun Oscar party.
See, yeah, I was supposed to go to that Oscar party, but you know, the bed just kept saying no.
You didn't miss a whole bunch.
Okay, well,
you didn't miss
fine,
a whole
then.
Bunch.
That's fine.
It was very much about the show,
mm-hmm.
And everyone was there having a good time. And we will get to the show.
Yes, we will.
In screen time. And we're going to switch up brain food.
Okay.
Today and going forward. And turn it into sort of like an icebreaker thing.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And it also has to do with the Oscars, which is fun.
Okay.
So let's jump into today's episode, today's grown folks business.
Mm-hmm. Bitch, I'm grown!
And it is about anxiety today.
Okay.
And this probably won't be the last episode that we have on anxiety because I feel like it's a really big topic, but I did want to touch on some of its broad strokes with you in particular.
Okay.
Because you are one of the most outwardly confident people uh-huh. I feel that I know.
Oh, okay. That's high praise. Very high praise.
And it's a kind of confidence that I would like to have sometimes mm-hmm. that I try to emulate.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been surrounded by a lot of confident women
mm-hmm.
In my family. That's just sort of a signature Maynard thing. It's mm-hmm. my family name, Maynard. And I see people out all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it all leads back to, you know, perception. And
right.
how we see the world, and
right.
especially how we see the world with technology nowadays.
Yes.
I feel like I go outside and I feel like I see a level of confidence in almost everyone else that I come into contact with that I've never been able to access myself.
Okay.
Which I think is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we all have our own worst critic thing going on. I think
yes,
that it's
absolutely.
A cliche for a reason.
Yeah.
But I wanted to talk about why that might be and how to get over hurdles that might be caused by that mindset.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you view anxiety?
Ooh, it's a very real thing. It's interesting you say that I seem like an outwardly confident person because that's exactly the correct phrasing of it. I mean, I'll say 80-20. I'm confident, you know, most of the time. But mm-hmm. then, of course, that 20% is the anxious side of me that really, if not tackled head on when I feel it coming, it can take over, you mm-hmm. know, a good portion of how I function. But for the most part, I think over time I've developed the perfect formula for me to recognize when that anxiety hits and how to address it for me, you know, in order to keep living my life.
Yeah.
But I pride myself for my sake and could definitely be more for public, you know, consumption, if you will. The outward confidence, just because that's how I safely, I guess, navigate the world. I think in my
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think safety is mm-hmm. a very broad thing that people should be concerned about and people don't think very critically about.
Right.
For me, anxiety manifests itself in numerous different forms for numerous different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And it's different with every person that I come into contact with.
Okay.
I think there's a certain amount of anxiousness that comes from me because I've always grown up with the idea that I'm at once too much for people and also at the same time not enough.
Mm. Okay.
Which is an interesting dichotomy to be in the middle of.
Right.
because you always want to be outgoing because you see other people doing that and it works wonders for them. Everyone loves that confidence and stuff. But, you know, sometimes you do need to dial it back. And I think that it's toggling between those extremes is a very difficult minefield to maneuver around. Okay. One thing about anxiety and it that I wanted to touch upon is its very close proximity to depression.
Yes.
Because you can have either one of these things or you can have both of those things. And when you have both of those things, you experience such, I think that's what people refer to a lot when they talk about mood swings, because you exist at such high highs and such low lows. And there's a movie coming out that we both have seen that deals a lot with that, called Love, Simon.
Oh gosh, yeah.
And Love, Simon, which calling it right now is going to have some pushback from sort of the depths of the LGBT community.
Yeah.
Just because it's very milquetoast.
Yeah.
In the way.
I love that. Milquetoast.
Yes.
Yep.
It's very milquetoast in the way it handles its themes and its characters.
Yeah.
But not in a way that insulted me in any way. Mm-hmm. And serves as a very nice primer for non-queer people.
That's a good way to put it.
Into something I love that it puts on display, which is the mundanity of queer life. Because this is like a normal kid and he just has like a normal day to day.
Right.
And he doesn't want to come out of the closet because it's going to change his entire life,
right.
He feels.
Right.
Which at the end of the day, it does. Just by nature of the world that we live in.
Right.
But I think it handles its depiction of Simon's sort of seesawing between just being so, so happy and then so, so sad.
Yeah.
Just because that's his life.
Right.
He's a teenager and your hormones are like crazy.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I was talking to my mom about the other week. I don't think that my teenage hormones or whatever, and full disclosure, I'm 25. I don't think that sort of adolescent hormonal storm that happens in your teens has really subsided, and I'm tired of it. I'm really, really tired of it. I'm really, really tired of it. I was telling my mom the other day, I was like, do you know how awesome it would be just not to be romantically or sexually attracted to literally anyone? Like, the things you could get done, like, in a day, it's insane. And I was like, there's so much fraughtness attached to our interactions with people. And I hate that because I like interacting with people, but I like interacting with people platonically. I can make a friend.
You can make a friend.
I can make a friend. I can make a number of friends.
I can make a pie. I can make a cake. I can make a friend.
I can make a dollar stretch. I can make a bomb pasta dish.
I'm through.
And I can make a friend. I was at a bar with my sister in Chicago, and they were doing karaoke there. And we both had like two Coronas, each of us. I think alcohol plays a big factor in this as well, in the way that people react to other people and the tearing down of those walls that anxiety can kind of put up. We were out and they were doing karaoke and there's this guy that was doing Life on Mars by David Bowie. And I just grabbed the second mic.
Oh.
And I started doing all the backup sounds from the song.
Okay, CJ.
Because I was like two Coronas in. Just two Coronas. By the end of this night, I had sang backup on like seven songs. I had done at least two Disney songs, another David Bowie song, a Beyonce song, and an Isley Brothers song myself. And these people in the bar had paid for me and my sister's drinks upwards of like $40.
Okay.
I can make a friend.
You have found a new side gig.
You know, I think that it's, and the same kind of thing happened to me on my birthday, because I'm a heart-to-heart drunk.
Okay.
I'm real bad about it, too.
Okay.
People in college used to be like, yo, we're not doing this. Not tonight. Just because we're out.
Give him a drink.
Just because we're out. Right? We're out. We're having a good time. I've got my makeup on. My face is beat and stuff like that. I can't have my mascara running. Not tonight. Not with you. It's not. We know where this is going. And we just going to pull it back. And we're going to pull you back.
See,
think of happy thoughts.
You know like Peter Pan. Think of happy thoughts. You are. Mm-hmm. You know what kind of drunk
I know exactly
you are.
What kind of drunk I am. Just and like, I know that. I know the type of night that's appropriate for it. You know? But does alcohol make you go crazy in terms of being, are you the on Christina?
Alcohol is just my amplifier. Mm-hmm. All it does is just make what I was going to do anyway happen a lot quicker.
Okay.
That's what it does. There's all kinds of drunk. I'm the horny drunk. That's me.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear, indeed. And I discovered that the hard way. But literal. Anyway, we'll go in. That's a whole other topic that we'll go into. Another day. I think I've broken CJ. I have broken him.
What Chris was saying on the read last week? Litte, titte.
So I have discovered that about myself. And so I would just say alcohol for me will, like I said, it is an amplifier, whether it's through actions or words or whatever it is. But it also does make me feel a lot more than what I would like to normally feel. You know, sometimes I find myself crying to Toni Braxton songs or whatever, you know.
The drunk cry is a bad cry.
Isn't
it's always a bad cry.
Isn't it?
There's
it's not
no
cute.
Good drunk cry.
No, not at all. Mm-hmm. Not at all. So, yeah, I would agree that alcohol definitely can play a role for sure.
What's an example of a time where anxiety got the best of you?
Ooh. Oh, gosh. I can think of several times. But the one time that I can think of specifically, I don't deal, or I do. Stress, for me, I'm one of those, I don't crack until the brim is just so full, until it's so to the brim. I am an internalizer. I've always been that way.
Yeah.
But I will vocalize once I've hit my cap. Mm-hmm. And usually the first thing to make me do that is stress. It's stress that I can't maintain. I'm very good at handling stress and putting in compartmentalizing. But I am thinking about the time when I, and full disclosure, as you said, I'm 31. I bought a house when I was 24.
Oh,
yeah.
That's a rough life.
And the process of buying the house. Because for me, the way my brain works, if you give me everything that I need to have to you and give me the deadlines, you will get them. You will get them on time. You'll get it the way it's supposed to be got. The thing that will tip me over the edge is when I do everything that I'm supposed to do and I get you everything in time, but then the other person on the other side that I'm giving all these things to fucks it up in some kind of way. And now
or
I'm
is
impacted.
Not listening.
Yes.
Or has not informed you of
exactly.
everything that you need.
Like when I got the wrong homeowner's insurance because they told me the wrong type and then that pushed my closing date.
Oh my God. I have like anxiety, like sweats right now, just listening to this.
It pushed my closing date to like a week out, and I'm a single person. I function very well on my own. I've had to, only child, all that stuff. So I got movers in order. I shut off my power, my this, my that on this date at this time. And like, I had everything.
You was ready.
I was, man, 24 years old, I had this. Like, I had everything. And then
it's
I got
more
that.
Responsible than I was 2 years ago.
I got that
or
one,
last year, I should say.
I got that I one like, phone call from the underwriters at the mortgage company, and they're talking about this is the wrong homeowner's insurance. And that moment is when I lost it. Like, I remember it was just literally like I felt so heavy in that moment because I knew what that meant because I know how long it takes for things like this to process. Mm-hmm. And I think it was more along the lines because I was so meticulous in making sure that I did everything I could do correctly that when someone else's mistake impacted my, you know, mm-hmm. everything that I had done, it was literally, I could visually see like everything just crumpling, everything falling. I was at work when I got the phone call.
It's the worst.
And I worked at a call center at the time. And I remember I took the headphones off of my head. I got up from my cubicle. I walked out to the aisle. I was silent. And the thing is, I can talk when I want to talk, mm-hmm. you know. And my coworkers, my boss, they know my mannerisms. And so they knew something was going on. I just stood up, put my headphones down, walked out. And just stood in the hallway. And I just stood there. And I just, it was almost like an out-of-body experience. I just stood there. And then my boss came out and told me what's wrong, asked me what was wrong. I looked at her and lost it. Just crying and crying and crying. And it was just one of those. And I think it was in that moment that I determined how I process stress. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I can process other people's stress, I can process, you know, work stress, things like that. But things that impact my life personally, this was a very huge risk that I was taking anyway, buying a house at 24. So I was nervous.
Buying a house at 24
yeah.
in 2011.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's a lot.
So I wanted to make sure, and I was doing it by myself. You know, mm-hmm. mom was across the country. Yeah. You know, I'm making all these decisions on my own. And I was just like taking a very big risk at, you know, trusting people and trying to listen to people and get advice. And keep in mind, I had just moved out to Kansas City when I was 23.
Wow.
So that was probably the most stressful thing that I've ever had to deal with, just because I feel like it was my first really, really huge big girl, I'm an adult
mm-hmm. thing.
Thing.
Yeah.
And I did everything right, you know.
And sometimes it bees like that.
Yeah. And it just, it
as
was
Alicia
like,
said.
Yeah. And I think that was the first time that I realized, man, I do have a breaking point. And mm-hmm. that was it. Like, and I think it was just, I had no control.
Yeah.
Over that situation because it wasn't anything that I had done. Mm-hmm. So that's my very adult answer to anxiety.
Yeah.
My experience with it, rather.
So, like I said, I'm 25, and I blame a lot of my, let's call it emotional wishy-washiness mm-hmm. on that and how young I am. But I used to work for a company, and when I was there, there was a culture there. There wasn't a lot of corporate oversight. And mm-hmm. there was a culture there of if stuff didn't go your way, just get mad. That's what everybody did. Just get mad. Throw things around.
Uh-huh.
I fell into it because I was there for 2 years. I fell into that culture and stuff. Something happened. One night we had an electrical storm and there was a power surge. And a lot of our systems with which we used to serve our purpose mm-hmm. there went down, and it was an extremely busy time
mm-hmm.
and we need everything that we needed for our apparatus to just work was gone. So I'm calling my superiors and my peers. They're giving me wrong phone numbers to call. All this stuff is going on. The employees under me are asking me questions that they know I don't know the answer to.
Mm-hmm.
Questions that I'd be asking if I was in their place.
Right.
You know, obviously, but the stress got to me. And girl, I balled up my fist and it went flying into a wall.
Oh.
And there was a hole in the wall That's how bad my anxiety can get.
Holy crap.
That's how bad stress can get for me. Mm-hmm. And that's just work, though. I have a huge issue that I'm crafting an entire episode out of. People have the tendency to beat themselves up sometimes when they make a mistake.
Yeah.
I beat myself up all the time when I make a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so heavy when you are the one that's calling yourself all these names,
right,
and telling yourself you can't do this, 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 and that. Because everybody around you is like, why are you feeling bad about this? There's no reason. And your logical mind, the smart side of your brain, very much understands, yes, obviously, in the grand scheme of things, you know, but there's such a desire to want to be good.
Right.
And good nowadays means the best.
Good means perfect. Good means the best. Yep.
You know, and trying to live up to the best.
Right.
Or perfect all the time will tear your mind apart.
Yes, it will.
Which is next week's episode.
Oh.
But
I'm finding out the same time y'all are, folks.
It's what I've been working on for a very long time, and it's going to be a complete format switch up.
This is CJ's house. I just visit.
Yeah, and everything will be a lot more sturdy, and it'll be a structure for us to have going forward. But that's neither here nor there this week, because this week we're talking about stress and movie stars. So I think that there's work to be done on everybody when it comes to this front.
Yes.
But one of the most important things I've ever learned, someone said that depression is the result of being stuck in the past.
Oh.
And anxiety is the result of being stuck in a potential future.
Holy crap. Okay.
Yeah. And that struck me so hard because, yeah, depression is just like, why didn't I do that? It's the sad version of that argument that you have with that person. But then, like, in the shower 2 days later, you like, you know what? I could have said to that bitch.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
She said I could have said your mama.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And you figure it out in the car on the way to the
DMV
or whatever.
I'm sorry, this is the time where I wish we had video on your face in that moment. That was hilarious.
I wish we didn't. Anyway. There's a reason that this is on iTunes and not on YouTube. But, yeah. And then with anxiety on the flip side of that. Mm-hmm. Anxiety comes from a reaction that you have to something going wrong or to something not going your way.
Yeah.
And you jump into the worst case scenario.
Man.
And the worst case scenario is always the easiest to jump to because you know yourself and you know all of your dirt.
Yep.
It's like we were talking about a few weeks ago with social media and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You get everybody else's highlight reel, but you know all of your stuff.
Yep. Yep.
You know every skeleton in your closet.
Yep.
You know every time.
Everything. Yep.
That you made a mistake.
Every cranny, flaw, everything.
So I think we can sort of shift into things that we do to try and fight this feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to go ahead?
Sure. Because mine is pretty easy or very simple because whenever I have an issue or just whenever I have a situation, whether it's, you know, dealing with anxiety or just a problem that I need to solve, I always have to take it back to the most simplistic, the most basic thing. Just because my sensory, whatever, all my feels are in overload anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't process too much more.
Yeah.
So when it comes for me, there are two different scenarios. It's when I feel the anxiety creeping up is one scenario. And then when the anxiety hits me and I didn't realize, you know, in one of those situations where it's just like, hey, bitch, I'm here.
Yeah.
Very rarely do I have the second. I usually am able to catch it when it's, you know, when it's trying to make its, you know, presence known.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, there are two things that I have to do. And it's funny because on my way over here, I texted a couple of friends and I said, hey, this is where my head is right now. Yeah. I need some alone time to process it first, but I will speak to you about it before the week is over. That's what I have to do. So I have to, and it's three very simple things. I have to acknowledge that I'm feeling something. I have to let somebody know that I'm feeling it, but I have to process it on my own first, you know, well, four steps. And then I have to, you know, the accountability, like, hey, I need to speak to you about this. So on this date, please reach, you know, don't let me bury this. It took me a really long time to get to that point because, again, only child. I've trekked across the country by myself. You know, I've moved out here, done a lot of things on my own.
Yeah.
I have proven to myself that I can survive on my own, but it's just a matter of should I or do I have to,
yeah.
You know? And it was probably when I got laid off, another situation that was out of my control that really forced me to rely on others to get me through that particular situation. But on my way over here, I was feeling some type of way. I told you I had a really bad day today. And I texted my friend and I said, hey, I'm feeling something. This is what's going on. This is what I think it's happening. I need to process it by myself and with you. Mm-hmm. And she texted me back, okay, perfect. And I think for me, in order to deal with anxiety, I have to acknowledge it. I have to process it. I have to, you know, talk about it with somebody. Because for me, every time that I've had a really anxious moment, it was me trying to tell myself something, you know, that I needed to do or that I needed, you know, usually it comes in instances where I need to make a tough decision that I don't want to make. And so usually I just have to process it internally and externally. And those are usually that, those are the two things I have to do every single time. When anxiety sneaks up on me and I have no idea where it came from, I can't be by myself. I don't necessarily have to be talking to anyone, but I have to get out of my house.
Got you. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So I'll go to a coffee house or I'll go to the library or I'll go to a bookstore or something. Because just being around other, and I'll put happy in quotation marks, other happy people, makes me feel better.
Yeah.
Cause it's almost like I'm absorbing a little bit of that and it gets me
positive
out of,
energy begets other positive energy.
And it gets me out of that instant anxiety attack. And it almost kind of allows me to take a step back and kind of process it, you know, once I'm kind of out of that, you know, the instant, you know, feeling of it. So I think I've gotten down what I need to do in those instances of having, you know, those different forms of anxiety. I've been dealing with it, you know, since what, 23 years old. So I think I've built something for myself that works for me. So what about you?
For me, it's been an interesting journey because I used to just feel bad and lash out. And then it got to the point where I was lashing in. I am a funny person. I've gotten to a point where I'm comfortable enough to say that. Mm-hmm. And one thing that funny people tend to do is they self-deprecate, which I'm definitely trying to get out of. Specifically because I think it just, whenever, you know, you see something and you make a joke and you're just like, oh, I'm so trash, you know?
Yeah.
Which is fun because, you know, we all are trash sometimes.
Yes.
But I want to get out of that. The other thing is have somebody around you who can empathize with you. Because not all of your friends, even some of your close friends, are capable of that. I think empathy is something that we take for granted. It's something that we think all people have, and a lot of people don't, or they don't have active empathy, I should say. I happen to have stumbled upon a friend within the last decade or so that is an active empathizer. I don't mind going to him with an issue that I'm having or talking to him. Like, I'm very much the, hey, how you doing? And even if I'm doing bad, I say, I can't complain because people, and I was talking to my therapist about this, mm-hmm. like the first time that I had a session with him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In the first session, we talked about the idea of asking people how they are. And then they say they can't complain because mm-hmm. I do it all the time. I heard my mom doing it growing up. I say it. And of late, and I wouldn't even say of late, I think for the past like 5 years or so, mm-hmm. whenever you say that to somebody, that's supposed to be the cool, me neither. That's the reaction.
Right.
The reaction to can't complain is not, oh, well, who would listen anyway?
Mm-hmm.
Shut the fuck up. Like, that makes, oh my God, how, that is so rude.
Yeah, yeah.
And all I'm saying, can't complain is, I've got some stuff going on, but it's not enough for me to disrupt your day.
Right.
Chill out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and my therapist, he was like, he had never heard somebody say that before. My therapist is a white man. I looked for a black woman, but they were too expensive.
You looked for a black woman.
I did look for a black woman therapist. But
I mean, we are always right. So,
but the therapist that I have right now is really great.
Mm-hmm.
And he was really taken aback by that. He was just like, really? Do people say that? I was like, yeah, people say it. Because at the end of the day, there was a whole BuzzFeed video about it. And I'll link that mm-hmm. in the video description, too, about this guy who went up and asked people, how are you, all day?
Mm-hmm.
And they'd say, I'm fine, and they move on, or they wouldn't say anything, or they say, how are you back? They're just like, how are you? How are you? You know, that kind of thing. And then he did another experiment when he'd ask somebody how they were, and then they'd ask back, and he'd actually say how he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And people would like react adversely to him, and because that's what happens.
Right.
You know? And I think that there really should be some intentionality about how you're feeling and how you describe how you're feeling and who you talk to.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, there's always going to be friends, family, people in your life who hope you're doing well.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, they really
that's
don't want to hear
it.
You know? And that everybody's got a life. Everybody's busy. Everybody ain't got the time for you. That's a whole nother thing. But it's definitely important to cultivate at least one relationship that mm-hmm. you can always go and say, you know, because when I talk to this particular friend, everything flows out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's like, oh, what's up? How have you been? He asks, how have you been?
Mm-hmm.
Genuinely. And everything literally just flows out in the same. And I try my damnedest to offer him the same courtesy and the same space with which to get all of that off of his chest and off of his mind. Now, the trouble with the living intentionally as a remedy for sort of life gunk,
mm-hmm.
the stuff that causes anxiety and causes depression, is the obstacle that I'm seeing right now is that I'm about to jump back into stand-up comedy.
Oh, okay.
And comedy, so much of it comes from awkwardness and pain.
Yeah.
And which not a lot of people really recognize.
Mm-hmm.
Or I think nowadays they are.
Yeah.
You see it popping up a lot more with like Neil Brennerman and mm-hmm. his 3-mic special mm-hmm. on Netflix, and also on Netflix, the Chris Rock special Tambourine.
I was going to talk to you about that. Yeah, because you said something that reminded me of mm-hmm. one of his bits.
And it's these more one-man show type
mm-hmm.
sort of, they're comedy shows,
yeah.
but they're also dissections of what it means to be a comedian, what it means to be living right now in this moment in this particular cultural context. And one of my biggest inspirations is Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah.
And I love Whoopi.
Did you see her dress at the Oscars?
Oh, she looked so good.
Oh my gosh. Okay, but back to you.
But we'll talk about the dresses.
Yes.
Whoopi, her particular brand of stand-up, the kind that she's most famous for,
mm-hmm.
She does characters.
Mm-hmm.
She does characters that are funny, but they're funny in response to a lot of pain.
Mm-hmm.
and a lot of upset mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And that's very much the kind of comedian that I would like to be. Mm-hmm. But does that path interfere with the actual betterment of myself?
You know, it's interesting you say that because you think about, you know, the comedians, you know, the Chris Rocks, the Whoopi Goldbergs, mm-hmm. you know, even Ellen, she's, you know, writing a stand up for Netflix right now. But then you also think about the other comedians, you know, your Robin Williams, mm-hmm. You know, and comedians that don't necessarily who, you know, had these amazing platforms and these amazing, you know, this amazing comedy shtick kind of deal. And just, and even Jim Carrey is somebody that I think about too, because I always think about how are you, you know, how are you, Jim Carrey? And I wish, like, sometimes I think about Robin Williams, like, he was, you know.
That's a gut check when that happened. Mm-hmm. That was a real gut check.
That, yeah.
In terms of, like, a multi-generational
yep.
talent
yep.
of, like, just of relevance yep. and of this outpouring of love.
Right.
And if you ever get a chance, watch Whoopi and Billy Crystal doing a sort of memorial for him on The View.
I don't. Do I want to? Am I going to?
Yeah, you are going to cry. God, that's not.
Damn it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm blessed enough to be in the position where people like me and then maybe yeah. I could like go on a tour
yeah.
or
yeah.
something. That's a very specific life
mm-hmm.
and it's a very lonely life.
Yeah.
And it's difficult to pinpoint whether or not I think it's worth it.
Mm.
But it is an expression that I enjoy.
Yeah.
It's scary. It's really, really scary.
Yeah.
I think anybody who's relatively new to stand up, and I think even like seasoned stand ups will tell you when you start, it's really scary because I've yeah. only done it like 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
It seems very much like a good avenue to funnel a lot of these feelings into and to try and be as sincere about it as possible while also trying to make people laugh because I enjoy making people laugh.
Right.
That's my favorite thing to do at the end of the day. So that's where I am. I'm Christina needs to talk to people. And I need to talk to people and try and make you laugh. Mm-hmm. We really want to know about your experiences with anxiety and how you get through it, because mm-hmm. hopefully what we said can help y'all in some way. And hopefully some tips that y'all have can come back and help us.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we want to move into the second segment, which will just be all screen time. Actually, no, not yet. Because brain food.
Yeah.
Brain food.
Okay,
so, but it's sort of overlapped because I thought a cool icebreaker would be, because this year's category for best original song uh-huh. was rather weak, in my opinion.
Categories. Okay, wait. This, the winner or the just the choices?
The category.
Okay, okay.
In general. I wanted to know that if you could.
Now, are you asking me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I wanted to know that if you could add a song to any of the Best Picture nominees or any movie that came out last year that you saw
okay.
and enjoyed that doesn't already have like music attached to it, what would it be and why?
Okay, so when you say that doesn't have...
That doesn't have a song. So if you could add a promotional single, a song to a movie, what which movie would you choose?
Oh.
And who would be the performer of the song?
I feel like you should have sent me this question ahead of time.
Ooh, that no. That's why it's an icebreaker.
Oh gosh, any movie that I mean, ooh, before like December, mm-hmm. I didn't really go to the movies that much.
Okay, so of all of the ones that you watched in that terrible marathon that you went to,
you said the terrible marathon. Oh gosh. Goodness. I'm gonna let
you saw all of them but one.
I saw all of them but one.
But okay, so I'll go first
you
just
go
to
first.
Give you an idea.
Yeah.
And I'll give you two examples.
Okay, I'm ready.
For a very long time, basically since July, I have been championing the idea that Christopher Nolan's Dunkirk mm-hmm. would have been more effective if it had a song attached to it. I think that it is one of Chris Nolan's best films. I'm not the biggest fan of him.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it does have a swell.
Did it need something by Harry Styles?
No, it did not. There's a particular moment towards the climax, a swell of emotion that is meant to be really intense,
mm-hmm.
but could have been more intense if it was punctuated by a song. Now, I'm not saying that it needed a song
mm-hmm.
in the film.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying that if there was a song that was crafted for the film that ran over the credits mm-hmm. and they were to pepper elements from that song across the score mm-hmm. and swell it up at mm-hmm. that point and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought it's packaging a film in a way that they really don't package movies anymore, mm-hmm. right? You know?
That's true.
And another one I thought of was, I also thought that Lady Bird
mm-hmm.
could have used a song as well, like mm-hmm. a dedicated song that was by, you know, especially if it was by someone from that time period,
yeah,
like an Amy Mann, like a Sarah McLachlan, mm-hmm. like, you know, like something like that, mm-hmm. just to add an extra punch,
mm-hmm.
because I understand that, like, people are just, I've said this to other people and they've been like, well, you know, you don't need to telegraph emotion to the audience. And I don't think that you're telegraphing emotion there. I think that I use the word punctuate for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you are adding to it. I think that you are giving it a bit more heft.
Gotcha.
So that your film is able to attract more people mm-hmm. and be remembered. Because at the end of the day,
mm-hmm.
what do you remember about Titanic? You remember the special effects, you remember Leonardo DiCaprio, and you remember Celine and that fucking
flute. My
heart
will go on.
Right?
Yeah, you ain't wrong.
I'm just saying.
You ain't wrong.
So, and I think that had they got Adele to do something for Dunkirk, the premier British pop superstar person, to do a very Adele-y, heartfelt ballad about British pride, because that's a lot, you know, the mm-hmm. end of that movie is about and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And have that over the end credits and playing in some TV spots and shit. That could have been another Oscar for Dunkirk.
You are real passionate.
I'm just saying, I miss the way films used to be packaged when I was a kid
mm-hmm.
in particular. But if you, and it doesn't have to be an Oscar nominee, if any movie you can think of that doesn't have a song that you would add a song to, what would it be? And who would sing the song?
Okay, so my favorite film of all time is Forrest Gump. Of all time. I've been watching that movie since I was 7 years old.
I feel like you might be taking this as a judgy face. It's not a judgy face.
I remember everything about that film.
Mm-hmm.
But none of it has to do with the music that was created mm-hmm. for that
like the
film.
Score.
Exactly. Yeah. The only reason I know the score is because I did a really intense paper on it in mm-hmm. college. The music of that film...
You know why people remember the theme the score from Titanic? It's the fucking flute.
Yeah.
Just saying, but continue. Forrest Gump.
I don't know who I would have sing. I just feel like okay.
You don't because really, I do.
I'm gonna let you tell me. But here's the thing. The thing that I remember specifically about Forrest Gump, it started with a feather and ended with a feather. Mm-hmm. And there is a feather theme associated with it is. Yeah. There is a song associated with that feather. It's this, I could recite it to you mm-hmm. or hum it to you. But I always felt like it's literally the most mundane story, just almost like fantasized, you know, Forrest Gump living through all of these various moments in time. Yeah. I would like a song mm-hmm. written, you know, just about this fantastic life, you know, living this fantastic life to some kind of really folksy hipster, you know, 1970s, 1960s kind of feel, not disco, but okay. But I don't know who would sing it. You would. You go ahead. You got a look. You got a twinkle. You go ahead and tell me.
I got
a
twinkle.
Who, oh, it's there. You got a twinkle. Who would sing the song, CJ?
My first instinct was Bruce Springsteen.
Okay. I can see that.
But then as you were explaining more, my mind immediately went to Michael McDonald.
Oh, my God.
And now in your mind, you're like, holy shit. Why didn't Michael McDonald do a song
about the damn Forrest feather? About the feather in Forrest Gump. I hate you so much.
I'm just saying. I'm just saying. There are a lot of elements that go to making a movie good and memorable and stuff like that. And
I'm done.
There's a reason why there's an Oscar category for
it. I thought of another one. The Post.
Okay. Did you like The Post?
I loved it.
Okay. Me too. I'm so happy to meet another person that liked The Post.
I loved
because
The Post.
Because the internet hates The Post just for being The Post.
I loved it.
I was so like, okay, Meryl is there because there were a lot more interesting nominees than Meryl and stuff and Tom and
yes,
things like that.
Yes.
But like they could have gave it costume design.
Yeah, they could have.
Right?
They could have.
Meryl's not, white and gold party moo of destiny.
Through. I was looking at her shoes the entire film.
Her paisley dress of victory at the end in the newsroom.
Those shoes. I loved all the shoes.
But anyway, we digress.
Yes,
but I think the Post.
I mean, just a little jingle, little
not a jingle,
little sum.
I think the Post could have benefited a little bit more from incidental music, a sort of soundtrack of the time.
Yes, like Forrest,
rather than a song itself. Mm-hmm. Like Forrest Gump is a fairy tale.
It is.
So Forrest Gump lends itself to that, and. And it definitely is about whether or not the film lends itself to it, I think, in terms of deciding which films need a promotional single or some sort of musical piece attached to it. But really, that's a really good suggestion. Forrest Gump. I had never thought about that. That I was just like, yeah, Forrest Gump should have had a song.
Just give it one.
But yeah, that's Brain Food. We're going to tweet the question out when the episode goes live. And we really would like to know if there's a movie that came out that you thought could use a song. And who would sing that song? Please let us know, because that was a fun game. I think we can switch into screen time now.
Yes, we can.
And talk about the 90th Academy Awards.
Yes, we can.
I would like to start off by saying
I'm waiting.
That the Academy Awards is not, quote, too long, unquote.
I agree.
It is however long it needs to be.
Yes.
Because every year we sit through a military processional.
Yeah.
Children singing.
Yeah.
A middling pop star singing.
Yes.
An actual pop star singing.
Yes.
All to watch grown men permanently damage themselves over a ball. And what you hoes won't do,
you bitches,
is try to shame me.
Oh, he took it there. This is personal.
Is try to shame me and my ilk, my cohort, the film fans of today and yesterday, for enjoying an extra clip of On the Waterfront, for giving Rita Moreno a standing ovation.
Wow.
In Kansas City when she's in Los Angeles.
Wow.
You won't do it. Not on my Rolex, not on my Casio, not on my watch, sis.
Through.
Not today. But onward.
Okay.
What did you think of the show? I'm sorry. I'm still hype.
The show as a whole, I greatly enjoyed it. Just because this is probably the most invested I have ever felt in an Oscar. Because I have seen 8 of the 9 Best Picture nominations.
More than me. Like, I was bragging last episode, and now you seem more than me.
I tried to make it to the 9th one, but...
What's the one that you skipped out
Billboards.
On? Billboards. Oh, good for you.
No, I didn't skip it intentionally. They had a technical difficulty during the marathon, and I said, I'm not about to stay here and start this film at 6 a.m. I'm going to be home.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed it. I do have a... Well, because I'm a music head, I have critiques.
Yeah.
But I... liked several things about it.
Okay, let's go in order.
Yep. Okay.
Let's talk Kimmel.
Okay, because that's where I was going first.
Okay. So Jimmy Kimmel is, in my opinion, the most
I'm not looking at you.
Mm-hmm. Of the late night hosts that we have currently, personally.
Give me a second.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
I think Stephen Colbert.
I can get behind that.
Leans real hard into the anti-Trump stuff.
Yes, he does.
Too much for what he's supposed to be doing on his show.
Okay.
I think that Jimmy Fallon is
the complete opposite.
Incorrigible sycophant. An incorrigible sycophant. You can't build a good show out of that because I think he's found a niche.
Mm-hmm.
I think Seth Meyers is still finding his way.
Mm-hmm.
But Kimmel is almost consistently funny, I think.
Okay.
At least on his show.
Okay.
And he's very workmanlike in his approach to this honestly thankless job.
Yes.
That is hosting the Oscars.
Yes.
He isn't the most controversial, and he doesn't move the show along as much as he probably should as host.
Uh-huh.
But one thing that I appreciated from him this year is that he knew when to be there and when to fall back. And he didn't make a bunch of the Me Too Time's Up jokes because the Me Too and Time's Up people were there to speak for themselves.
Correct.
There could have been more Matt Damon jokes. That's my favorite thing about about Jimmy Kimmel.
He gave you a couple.
But there were, but I thought on the whole, really solid from him. I assume you have a different opinion.
Yeah, but not opposite end of the spectrum. Okay. I just thought it was for me.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because I'm used to a lot of myths from the Oscars. I'm like, give me Chris Rock. Where's Chris Rock for the Oscars? No. I just felt like
The Academy hates Chris Rock.
Oh, yeah. I know. Oh, I know.
Even though he's fun to watch.
But here, and I think that's what I was missing. Jimmy Kimmel is, okay, let me give him his props. I do think I liked his opening monologue thing. You know, I chuckled in places, you know.
Yeah. And then I liked the bit about the Oscar being the perfect Hollywood man because he doesn't have peanuts.
That I enjoyed. Like, he had his moments, and I don't know. Okay, the theater across the street bit.
Yeah, there was it's an inverted version of a bit he did last year where they sort of led a tour.
I remember that. People. And they brought the people to the Oscars. Now they brought the celebrities to the people. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
It just took so long.
It did take a very long time.
To the point where I was just kind of like, I feel awkward for me.
I will say that it did take longer than it needed to take.
Mm-hmm.
However,
it
gave you Gal Gadot.
Yes.
Screaming twice about how much better this was than being at the Oscars. And it gave you...
if you say Armie Hammer with a hot dog gun.
Armie Hammer.
I was waiting
with a giant hot dog gun.
Yeah.
And there's this shot of this femme black dude, and he's got like one of those wide brim fedoras mm-hmm. on and stuff, and he sees all these people and he puts his hand on his chest, and I was just like, he is tomorrow's meme. I was like, because he's everybody right now, because he saw Armie Hammer in the hot dog gun.
Uh-huh.
Huh. Somebody was just like, can you imagine being stoned and Armie Hammer walks in with a giant hot dog gun? And I was like, well, I have. but I think that most of Kimmel's bits mm-hmm. worked. They might have just ran over 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah. But I also think it just, for me,
because I like the jet ski thing.
Yeah.
I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
And I liked that the guy who actually won the competition or whatever, uh-huh. and he's like a below the line guy, uh-huh. so he's not front facing, he's right. not like a name or right. anything like that. Right. I like that he was willing to commit to the bit. I like yeah. that.
I just think, like I said, I would like to see a different host next year.
Definitely. Even bring Whoopi
will
back.
I
She's
be
downstairs.
Right? Will I be pissed if they bring Kimmel back?
No.
No.
Not at all. Because I think he does the job.
I'm just kind of like, I would like to see if someone else can also do the job. You know, hashtag what Maya Rudolph.
Oh, yeah.
Tiffany
Haddish and Maya Rudolph. Yeah, mm-hmm. definitely. I think there was a lot of calls for that. Mm-hmm. Honestly, if they don't get that, if they could just be our new sort of comedy duo, I'd like Haddish and Rudolph
special.
Meet Frankenstein.
Yeah,
I'd
like a variety hour.
Yeah, variety. Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. A 2-woman show on Broadway. Mm-hmm. They were phenomenal. Yes. And she brought back the dress.
I noticed it immediately. I said, "Is that the dress?"
I was like,
with
oh,
her SNL
shit.
Hosting dress, and then what did she wear it before?
To the Girls Trip premiere.
Girls Trip premiere,
yeah. Yeah, I was like, she is getting everything
dress.
Out
she
of this
ready.
Dress. Also, Maya Rudolph in what looked like just this straight down, like mm-hmm. red velvet, mm-hmm. like cloak almost
yeah.
and I was just like, I don't know if anybody but her could pull that off.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, and it's always fun to see Maya Rudolph pop up in these things because she's
her.
Married to Paul Thomas Anderson mm-hmm. and he's always nominated for whatever he's doing. So musical performances, let's jump into
okay
them.
so
if you had to rank them, what would be your ranking?
My favorite mm-hmm. performance,
number 5. Or number...
No, lowest.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
My least favorite performance. Mm-hmm. I'm still... Okay. And it's solely because of how...
Is it Sufjan?
No.
Is it Mary?
Yeah.
There was a lot of... One trend that I noticed, there was a lot of backup dancers or backup singers enveloped in shadow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the thing. Yeah,
I was like, okay, sure. I would say that hers is my least favorite too, just because it's not a top tier Mary song.
It's not,
and
I just, I almost, and I know, it, and I, it, I hurt to say this because it's not true. But during this particular performance, and it could have been nerves, mm-hmm. and it also could have been the horrible sound that they had mm-hmm. as well. But it almost felt like that song was out of her range. Like,
yeah, she did seem to be struggling in a way that I don't
yeah,
think I've ever really seen her
right,
struggle.
Right,
right. That was very...
it was off-putting. I was
yeah,
like...
I definitely feel like she may have been nervous.
Yeah.
Because she was making history. She's
yeah,
the first
she
woman
was.
To be nominated for the same film for an acting role and best original
yeah.
song.
Yeah, and like I said, I mean, it's no, I'm proud of her because mm-hmm. she put me in that position.
Yeah.
I'd be like, never mind, and walk off.
I will say this. One thing that I enjoyed about this year was way better than last year. Mm-hmm. They had the winner of last year's Oscar for best original song mm-hmm. was City of Stars from La La Land.
Yeah.
Whatever you think about that movie and mm-hmm. those songs, the thing that irritated me
that
the
Ryan
most
Gosling didn't sing
is
the
that
sound.
Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone didn't go up there and sing those songs because it's one thing to throw people who don't sing and dance into a movie about singers and dancers.
CJ is going to punch something.
But then not to commit to it.
Yeah.
And to put John Legend up there, the only person, the person that the movie is saying is wrong about jazz
right.
and stuff. Yep.
It just made
me so angry.
Yeah.
But I love that the people who sing the songs in the movie
sang
were up here
on
singing
the stage.
Them
yep.
on the stage.
Yeah.
I will say that that was also my least favorite.
Mm-hmm.
My second to least favorite was Sufjan because the sound was so bad.
The sound. His voice.
That
it's
jacket
a very
was very
unique
nice.
Unique sound. Oh yes, I wanted it.
But the also, I wished it, I was just wanting to hear Visions of Gideon. Anyway.
I was just about to say. I mean, it's the wrong song.
Yeah.
It should have been Visions of Gideon.
So, onward and upward, I guess.
Yeah.
Three was This Is Me.
My three was Remember Me.
Okay. For it was This Is Me because I thought that they were going to do the whole circus thing where the people come out and they're dressed as the people from the circus and stuff because that's a song for it.
Now, and here's the thing.
She performed it on Graham Norton like
and it was
3 weeks
great.
Ago, and it was great.
And didn't she do the moves with them too?
And she was doing
she
the
was
moves
doing all
with
the
them
moves.
And all that stuff. But she, I don't know, maybe she was more nervous.
Right.
We're talking Kiala Settle, who plays the bearded lady in Greatest Showman singing the song.
Well, here's the thing. My answer differs depending on how I'm judging the performance. Am I judging it on vocals? Not vocals, but just, the song
you're,
and how we're performing.
I think you're judging
or
it
am
on
I ju- the entire performance.
Thing.
If it's the entire performance, then I'm still gonna say Remember Me is number three for
the
me.
The reason that I liked Remember Me so much is that I have fallen into a YouTube rabbit hole last week of these old school Disney Oscar performances for Best Original Song that were so wild and so elaborate. There's like Nell Carter doing Friend Like Me from Aladdin. The Seven Up guy from the 70s.
Oh God,
doing Under the Sea from the Little Mermaid and stuff like that. David Alan Grier and Ernie Sabella doing Hakuna Matata, you know, that kind of thing. I was blown away by the elaborateness of them. Brad Kane and Lea Salonga doing A Whole New World on an actual magic carpet apparatus thing. They're wild. And this very much reminded me of that. And also, I just like seeing Miguel a lot.
Miguel did fabulously, but Miguel also wasn't nominated for nothing. So he was just like, this is what I can do this really well. He didn't have no nerves.
Yeah, I see that.
Miguel sounded great.
He did sound great.
He sounded great.
He always sounds great, though. Miguel can really sing. And I think that Stand Up For Something is a bad song.
No, it's a bad song, but
it
Andre
was the
Day,
best performance.
yes, it was. Andre Day sang the shit out of that song.
Sing,
I said, girl.
And, I want her to have a new song.
Yeah. Okay,
because
so,
you know what I'm tired of?
And I rise like the
tea. Can I tell you that I went to see that cute Reese Witherspoon movie that came out last year, the Nancy Myers movie she was in. And during the trailers, they played the preview for Stronger, which was supposed to be Jake Gyllenhaal's Oscars-y thing because he was the guy who lost his legs in the Boston Marathon and stuff. And as that trailer was playing, and he's like on the physical therapy cane, and learning to walk on his new legs and stuff like that. And I turned to my friend I was seeing the movie with, and I said, if they play that And I Rise Up song by Andra Day at the end of this trailer, I'm going to lose it. And when I say that they get to that sort of walk-in area with, like, the two bars that they have in physical therapy, and Jake Gyllenhaal starts to do his little shuffle across it. And they go, and I rise up. I was so mad. I was so mad. I literally I did my popcorn like this. I just threw it. I was like, oh my God, I'm so tired of hearing that goddamn song. So I'm glad that she has another thing.
Okay, so with all that being said, we know that my second favorite song was the performance was This Is Me.
Yes.
Kiala?
Mm-hmm,
okay, Settle. Yeah, Kiala Settle. Here's the thing. You've seen that YouTube video.
I've seen, yeah.
Of her when she was performing it for to get it greenlit.
Oh, also another reason that one fell behind for me mm-hmm. is because she was doing the thing where she gets welled up yep. during the climax.
Yep.
But it was so very obviously fake.
Here's the thing. She was doing the, you know, during that, when she, in the YouTube video where she was, you know, singing to get the song mm-hmm. greenlit, to get the production greenlit.
Yeah.
She did it then too, you mm-hmm. know. Granted,
but that was
that
very,
one was very authentic,
very
real. She did it again this time, and while
looking directly into the camera,
oh,
and this is who I'm meant to be.
This is me. And okay, as someone who has been in choirs and have been doing. Live performances and stage performances all of her life.
You understand pitch.
Yes, but also it's never about how you start.
Mm-hmm.
It's about how you finish. And from that point on,
yeah,
it was just flat as fuck.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason I was so involved in the performance is because of everyone else
mm-hmm.
that was in the performance, and they panned out to the audience, and yeah. the audience, Viola Davis was
getting yeah, that was interesting
that was,
to see.
That was me. I was like, yes. Okay,
because it's a song that's built for that.
Yes.
Because everything that happens at the Oscars
yes.
is built.
It's meant to be a moment.
It's meant to be a moment specifically to engage
mm-hmm.
actors.
Right.
Actors are
right.
overrepresented in the Academy.
Right.
That's definitely a song that's mm-hmm. just, you know, gonna get mm-hmm. that crowd pumped up, right?
And you, cause, yeah.
And how did you feel about Remember Me winning? Cause I'm fine with it personally.
I'm fine with it.
It's a weak
because,
year.
Because, huh?
It's a weak year.
Yeah. I'm fine with it because of Robert Lopez.
Yeah, definitely.
That's really, and
EGOT,
Kristen
the
Anderson.
First ever uh-huh. double EGOT.
And I'm fine with it because of him and her.
And I like whenever they win an award together.
They talk about the kids.
Double time thing where like he's on the mic and then he backs away and then she's on the mic and then she backs away. I like that. I think it's
just,
cute.
There was really nothing this year. I mean, I wanted Mystery of Love to win because I like Call Me By Your Name. That's mm-hmm. the only reason.
Yeah.
You know, that's my favorite film.
Well, then let's move on into some of the below the line stuff. Were you really paying attention to any of that?
Yes.
Your sound editing.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So Dunkirk won sound editing.
Rightfully
sound
so.
Mixing. I thought so too. I was with a hater, Adrian. But there are a lot of people who really wanted Baby Driver. And I'm
no.
just like, Baby Driver is a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
I've
never seen it.
It's the best R-rated Disney Channel original movie you'll ever see.
I can't wait to see it.
People wanted it to win one of these awards mm-hmm. because they didn't want Dunkirk to win.
Interesting. After I saw Dunkirk, I was like, Dunkirk needs to win. I didn't even see any of the other.
Yeah. It's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And it's also very in your face. One thing about the Academy is they enjoy bombast. And we'll get back into that when we get to the actor categories.
Yep.
But they typically gravitate towards bombast.
Mm-hmm.
The most noticeable and stuff like that. Especially because the top four categories, your best director, best picture, best actress, and best actor,
mm-hmm.
tend to dictate how the below the line categories go.
Mm-hmm.
They're not looking at any other movies.
Mm-hmm.
But out of that selection of movies, Dunkirk was the best.
Yeah, I agree.
For those particular awards.
Yes.
I think that was there anything that you were surprised by that won?
I didn't. Okay. I've only heard about Blade Runner 2049.
But okay. Oh, here's another nice conversation that I can have for my movie geeks and movie fans who insist on throwing Blade Runner 2049 into every conversation.
Okay.
Blade Runner 2049 won Best Cinematography for Roger Deakins.
It won his 14th, two awards, right?
Yes, and I believe visual effects.
Okay.
This Roger Deakins is 14th nomination, first win. He's been doing it for a very long time.
Okay.
And I'm glad that he got it. He's very good at what he does.
Okay.
He wasn't really doing anything particularly new with Blade Runner. It was very much just sort of a newer augmentation of what Ridley Scott and his people did back when the original Blade Runner came out. Okay. I need y'all to understand, I need everybody who's complaining about Blade Runner 2049 being shut out of the big categories to understand something. Listen to me. I love you, and I hope that you can express that same love back to me when I say that I mean this very wholeheartedly and with all of the affection and compassion in the world. Nobody gives a fuck about Blade Runner. I'm sorry. No one cares. No one cares.
I didn't even know that movie was nominated.
Like, people didn't go see it because people didn't go see the first Blade Runner.
Oh, man.
You know, it's a beautiful movie. I'm glad to watch it again now that it's on DVD and I can see it, or it's on streaming or whatever. I can see it on a TV with the words on, because
Academy Award winning film. Mm-hmm. Blade Runner 2049.
And I'm not in it. I think it deserved both of the both of the ones that it got. Maybe not cinematography, because Dunkirk's cinematography was so good.
Yep.
But but I'm not upset that it won either one.
Okay.
I'm glad to watch it again now that it's on streaming and on Blu-ray and DVD and stuff with the words on the screen, because I couldn't barely hear anything anybody was saying in that movie, and a bitch needed a caption closed. I am. Look. Blade Runner 2049, y'all have it. Y'all have wanted a Blade Runner sequel for a very long time. Y'all have it. Let the rest of us alone. Okay? Again, onward. Score, not Alexandre Desplat's best score, but it was probably the one that had the most consistent theme throughout it.
Is this Shape of Water?
Shape of Water.
Thank
yes.
you. Okay.
And I think we can move from specific categories into just specific films. Shape of Water is a beautiful movie.
Yes.
That we will not be talking about in 5 years.
I 1,000% agree with you.
I'm glad that Guillermo del Toro won. He's won Best Director.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it is a wonderfully directed movie. Mm-hmm. Probably not the best of that category.
I agree.
But still very good. Mm-hmm. Latinos really showed out last night.
Yes, they did.
I'm really happy for the people behind Coco and stuff like that.
Yep.
Not Alfred Molina.
Did you
Adrian
say
Molina.
Alfred Molina.
They're both A's in Molina's,
she
girl.
She was wrong.
Adrian Molina and Lee Unkrich, who also co-directed the film.
Mm-hmm.
But Adrian Molina is the only director to win an Academy Award, the only Latino director to win an Academy Award for a movie about Latinos, which I found very interesting.
Okay. Well, before we get too far into this, let me just say this just real quick. Academy Award winner, Kobe Bean Bryant. I just want to say that matters to me.
I'm happy.
As
I don't have a lot of
who was watching Kobe Bryant since she was about eight. Just because my mom is an avid basketball.
Oh, and I get Alfred and Adrian mixed up.
You know, and your
ball's the wrong straight.
It is a sport with a ball that goes somewhere for some points.
Okay.
But yeah. So
I would say that
was interesting,
because that's voted on by animators, and that's not a very popular short. I would say that Oscar was more for Glenn Keane
mm-hmm.
than it was for Kobe Bryant. Because Glenn Keane is a Disney legend.
I'm gonna put your hand down and just let Kobe have his shine.
He's a Disney legend.
Kobe wrote the story, so let Kobe have his shine.
We are gonna give Glenn Keane his roses too,
and we are gonna give Kobe.
I did not watch a ton of movies last year. Mm-hmm. I did not get a chance to peek at all of the shorts, live action or animated. I'm so happy that A Fantastic Woman, a film that I'm looking forward to a lot, that comes out this week.
Yes, it does. Here. I want to see it.
It won Best Foreign Language Film. I'm very excited about it.
Daniela Vega looked
beautiful. So beautiful.
Yeah.
And I'm very excited to see that movie. That just made me even more excited to see it. Supporting actor and supporting actress.
Yep.
What are your thoughts? I have thoughts, but what are your thoughts?
Well, I didn't see three billboards, so Sam Rockwell was kind of like, oh, okay, cool.
He's very good in it. I do not like that movie. He's very good in it.
I believe it. And then, help me, supporting actress.
Allison Janney.
Okay. Didn't see I, Tonya. So
Allison Janney is an actor's actor.
Okay.
She's workman talent, mm-hmm. and she's been doing it for a very long time, mm-hmm. and she's been consistently good for a very long time. I'm glad she has an Oscar. I'm a little annoyed that it's for this movie in particular.
Okay.
Just because, like I said again, and it's also part of the Sam Rockwell thing too, the Academy favors bombast. They do. They like a big, showy acting role. You know? That's their thing.
Right.
That's what because the kind of thing that Viola Davis does all the time, where she is sort of just talking very fast at the screen with tears in her eyes and snot in her nose.
Yeah.
And people enjoy that. Now, Allison Janney is playing a very one-note villain type role.
Okay.
She's doing it very well.
Okay.
So, but it's very much the kind of performance that the Oscars are going to be like.
Gotcha.
You know, that's it. Upward into Best Actor.
Best actor, I knew that.
Everybody knew it was going to happen. It was his time or whatever. Because they didn't give it to him for Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy a number of years ago.
Yep.
And I really, really was pulling for Timothy Chalamet.
Oh, me too.
Because Timothy Chalamet, and I gotta say that I have not seen Darkest Hour, so I don't begrudge Gary Oldman winning the award.
He sounds like this throughout the entire movie. But that's how he talks.
But Timothy Chalamet, I'm just thinking about that scene, the scene in the bedroom in Call Me By Your Name. Mm-hmm. Before they even do anything, Timothy Chalamet is doing so much.
Mm-hmm.
And in the aftermath of that, some people see it as like metaphor. Some people see it as, literary metaphor. Some people see it as metaphor for, you know, the relationship that's happening. Mm-hmm. I just think him fucking the peach is funny.
Yeah.
But the immediate aftermath of him fucking the peach.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that I was moved by a performance last year quite like that. I can't remember a movie that a guy was in, I should say, mm-hmm. that put me in the state that Timothy Chalamet's performance puts you in at the end of Call Me By Your Name.
Yeah.
I also think that Armie Hammer should have been nominated for Best Supporting Actor
because
I don't think that those performances work without each other.
They don't. In my opinion, Armie Hammer's one of his best moments was at the end of the film. Before he left,
mm-hmm.
Elio's character, when he was sitting on the bed, staring at Elio, and just the look on his face, it wasn't like the most expressive; it was more his eyes.
Yeah,
and I just felt like those moments about Armie Hammer, because he did it several times throughout the film. Those were the moments that I appreciated him the most. So I do think he should have been nominated. I also think, you know, Michael Stuhlbarg.
Yes, definitely.
Should have.
Definitely.
But, it is what it is.
It is what it is. I'm glad that Timmy got in there.
I do. Yeah, he has so much time.
I tweeted today that he looks like he was born in a perfume commercial. He does. He does. He does. He has Chanel number 5 cheeks.
All right, so continuing on.
He does. I'm just saying. He has a very long career ahead of him. Yes, he does. Greta Gerwig has a very long career ahead of her.
Yes, she does.
So does Saoirse. So does Daniel Kaluuya.
Yes, yes, yes.
You know, into Best Actress, we should jump because I said Saoirse's name. Meryl was the only person that I felt could have been swapped out with someone else. I liked all of those performances that are in the Best Actress race, but...
I'm sorry, wait.
Three
Best
Billboards.
Wait, real quick. Best Supporting Actress, I just realized. I feel like Leslie Manville was robbed. But anyway, back... Okay. Go ahead.
Gotcha. Okay. Duly noted. But in Best Actress, I go back again. I will not stop saying it because you don't have to stop saying true things. The Academy... favors bombast. And there is no performance more bombastic this year than Frances McDormand in Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, or as I like to call it, Three Bigots Outside the Realm of Reality About Racism in the United States. And she's very good. She's very good at doing the thing that she's doing. But Saoirse is doing such layered stuff in Lady Bird. In Lady Bird, and I think I tweeted a few weeks ago or something like that, that Lady Bird triggered me. I'm trying to stop saying triggered willy-nilly.
Yeah. Lady Bird is pretty much my life in California before I'm
gone. Look here. I was going to take my mom to go see it. And then I saw it with Micah just on a whim because we were out. And I said, I'm really glad that I did not go see this with my mom because I did not want the conversation that was going to happen after that movie. I didn't want it. I didn't want it. Because it's so... She's... Lady Bird in the film is so reminiscent of all of us, of so much of this. I think because this fictional character of Lady Bird, of Christine, was born on the cusp of that you can be whatever you want to be for no reason sort of upbringing that a lot of people had, right? And to see that unfold when it unfolds, it's a credit not only to Saoirse, whose name I learned how to pronounce 2 weeks ago.
You learned. That's what it takes.
I was calling that little girl Sunrise for so long.
I wouldn't call her nothing, so couldn't. Better than me.
But it's a testament to her performance, but also Greta Gerwig's direction and getting that performance out of her. And also having Laurie Metcalf, who I thought was was my pick for supporting actress, to play off of. Lady Bird's a phenomenal movie. If Lady Bird upset and took home Best Picture, I would not be upset because that's a great movie. And there's like this narrative going around that Greta is only there because she's a female director. That's a fucking phenomenal movie. And I will not hear otherwise.
You will not.
We will not have it. Oh.
Are you done?
Are you done?
Are you done?
But yeah, Best Picture went to The Shape of Water.
Yeah,
which
it did.
Very much feels like an artist Hurt Locker.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Spotlight. Spotlight's a movie I love, but you know, a lot of people aren't talking about it still, unless they're me. And... at the end of the day, people are going to be talking about Get Out. People are going to be talking about Lady Bird.
About the two most important awards.
What were the two? Oh, yeah. Original screenplay for Jordan Peele, which was amazing. If you've seen the picture of Keegan-Michael Key jumping up on the couch.
That picture.
I mean, when like even at that big Oscar party that I was at, everybody jumped up and was screaming.
Well, yeah. And then Beth adapted. Screenplay
for James Ivory. Everybody's just like, man, Logan should have got no. Logan shouldn't have went home with nothing because this is the fucking GOAT. This is a man who has a type of movie named after him. He is the reason that Merchant Ivory movies exist. He is the best at what he does in this particular race, we'll say. But in Call Me by Your Name. Is an almost immaculate film on every level.
Yeah.
So any award that it went home with last night was gonna be a no argument for me.
No argument. Yep.
So
I lost it for three reasons. Because Daniela Vega introduced Sufjan. Then we had Call Me by Your Name one. Yes. Call Me by Your Name one. And then right after that, Jordan. Yep. Jordan Peele won.
It was a good night, I thought.
There's
a lot of, you know,
am satisfied.
There's a lot of stuff in the cultural zeitgeist about some of the winners mm-hmm. and us rewarding them. And there's been a whole bunch
Here's the thing.
We separate the art from the artist stuff. And
here's
so
the
on
thing.
And so forth.
I cannot stand Gary Oldman for my own personal reasons. But did he act his ass off and did he deserve that reward? Unfortunately, yes.
Okay.
So I will shut up about that. Jordan Peele winning for screenwriting.
Mm-hmm.
I feel was a huge thing.
It's a huge boon for comedy, mm-hmm. for comedians. Mm-hmm. It's a huge boon for horror as mm-hmm. a genre.
Mm-hmm.
It's great.
But also just black writers.
Black writers, yeah.
You know, and that was another thing that, because somebody on Twitter was like, this screenplay, the screenwriting award was probably the most important one to them. And they explained why for those reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that we can't use more, you know, black women winning best actor, best actress, you know,
and more Latino people
and more Latino,
Asians.
You know, and more black men winning, you know, best actor mm-hmm. and blah, blah, blah. And I don't want to say, you know, we've seen it before, but we've seen that. Yes, I want to see more of it.
It's a good performance inside a very English patient movie.
Oh. But yeah, I'm ready to see more, you know, people of color winning technical. And more genre film. Yeah.
You know, I think this
women
year was
well.
Really interesting.
Because
mm-hmm. I went back and I looked at... Because I think about awards, and we're about to wrap up. I think about awards, and I think about the box office.
Mm-hmm.
And I go back to the 80s, and I look at the top 10 list of a given of highest grossing movies
mm-hmm.
in a given year in the mm-hmm. 80s. And how much overlap there is mm-hmm. with the films that were nominated at the Oscars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like one for one, obviously.
Right.
But still... you know, would a movie like Moonstruck
mm-hmm.
have won Best Actress and been nominated for all the Oscars that it was nominated for 5 years ago? No, you know, there's so many other things
mm-hmm.
like that. And the reason that there was so many interesting nominations this year is because they made a deliberate effort
yep.
to diversify the Academy
mm-hmm.
and I think they should keep making those efforts. I
yeah.
still believe that they, and I know they don't want to do it because of piracy, but I still personally believe that they should have all of the screeners on like a Netflix type service
mm-hmm.
that people can watch and have like logins. So everyone has to have watched a certain percentage
That's
of the
smart.
Movies
yeah.
to vote.
Yeah.
At the end of the day. And, you know, the Oscars are fun. And
they
there's,
are.
I know a lot of people make fun of the, Stephen Thompson on Pop Culture Happy Hour always mm-hmm. makes fun of the, a salute to the movies, kind of those montages,
uh-huh.
you know. But they were all great this year.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to, they were celebrating everything that film has to offer, I think. Even the stuff that wasn't nominated, you know, like Wonder Woman and stuff.
Yeah,
but
I will say, in memoriam, where was Della Reese?
Where was Della Reese? Where was Adam fucking West?
Yeah.
I was so angry.
Yeah.
I was, like, shaking. I was like, where? That makes no sense to me.
Yeah, they forgot
a few
people.
Like, there were people I was glad to see, you know, I was glad to see June Foray there.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I, as a kid who grew up without cable, public access cartoons were the shit.
Yep.
And Rocky and Bullwinkle was the shit. So I will go up.
Yeah.
I went up for June Foray when nobody else in the room went up for June Foray. Right? But also Eddie Vedder singing this like Tom Petty song. Last year's In Memoriam was like tailor made for CJs. It was Sarah Bareilles.
It was
Sarah Bareilles singing mm-hmm. So Far Away
mm-hmm.
by Carole King.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended with Carrie and Debbie. And I was just like, oh my God, that's really morbid to say, but there's never been an In Memoriam more tailored to CJs ever before. But there are ups, there are downs, but there always are. My biggest, and the thing I want to end on.
Okay.
my biggest problem with the Oscars is that for the past few years, not for the past few years, for the past decade or so.
Okay.
Since like the second or third time Whoopi hosted, the Oscars have been apologizing for themselves just for existing. They get on and they're just like, oh, the show's going to be so long and we're so sorry and stuff like that. No, no, that's not what this is about.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Carrie Underwood doesn't swing in from the rafters in New Orleans Superdome and shit talking about nixing the national anthem because we got to watch some more 300-pound dudes smashing the other 300-pound dudes.
Right.
You know, we can have this and they can have this, you know. People enjoy it. And also, the Oscars aren't too political. They've always been political. You can't
you can't remove politics from the Oscars.
Politics is in everything by nature of existing.
Yeah.
Water is wet. The sky is blue. Stacey Dash is ashy. And everything has politics in it. It's like, those are the four fundamental truths. Also, fat meat is greasy, but that's not here nor there.
I'm through.
That's a solid episode.
Solid.
Where can people find you on the internet?
Oh, gosh. At LCMarie19 on Instagram and the Twitter.
And you can find me at CJ Talking, CEEJAY Talking on Twitter. And CJ Talks literally everywhere else. We'll be back next week with an episode that I think is going to resonate with a bunch of people. And it's going to have a slightly more structured format. And I'm super excited to let you guys hear it. But until then, thank you for listening to All Right OK. You're going to be all right. And you're going to be OK.
Yes, you will.
Bye.
Bye.